Hey, this is Southside Johnny from the Asbury Jukes, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks. Yes, you are.
Hi, this is Tommy Shannon, and you're listening to Iron City Rock. Enjoy it.
Hi, this is George Lynch from Minsonob, Dawkins, Souls of Lee, and you're listening to Iron City Rock.
All right, Pittsburgh! You are the best! You got the best!
Hello and welcome to episode 548 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 548, we are joined by two podcast veterans here at Iron City Rocks. We are joined by Mr. Tommy Castro, blues rock guitarist, who is coming in to do a show at Moondogs and has a brand new album out. So we will talk to him in just a little bit. But off the top, we have joining us for, I'm going to guess, probably fourth or fifth time, Mr. George Lynch is gracious enough to lend us some of his time to talk about the final ride tour of Lynch Mob, a band that's been around since kind of the first ending of his stint with Dawkins. Had a fantastic album with Oney Logan and then Robert Mason and you know, many, many great records. They've been doing this tour that started in 2024 and is coming, you know, to an end in 2025, sadly. But we were lucky enough to get a second dose of the Lynch Mob on this tour. They started out in Jurgles and they're going to bring it back through on the 26th. So without further ado, we are going to get to Mr. George Lynch.
That's right now.
Welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Mr. George Lynch of Lynch Mob. How are you doing this morning, George?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for calling.
It's a pleasure to talk to you guys. We're here actually in 2024. You did a show in February, kind of at the beginning of the final ride tour here at Jurgles, and you're going to be coming back through to do a second helping for us on the 26th. Always a crowd favorite when you guys roll into town. Can you talk a little just about the experience of kind of the final chapter, the final ride of the band? You know, is it kind of sunk in, a little sentimental? How does that, you know, kind of toy with your emotions when you're going through this?
Well, I mean, that's a mixed bag. You know, I thought that it would make sense to go out with a band that, or a version of the band, which this is, that is remained intact for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Lynch Mob has been, has a history of having a revolving door.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's been frustrating for me because, you know, when I first put the band together in 89, I was hoping for the exact opposite. I wanted it to be really just, you know, kind of this immovable object. And, course, that did not happen. So, but we have a great time and spend, you know, when we spend time together and tour, we just, it's just really like kind of your dream fun band. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we joke around a lot, we work hard, and the band does, you know, we bring it, you know, we get on stage and we get in the studio. So I thought, well, that's the way to go out. And also, you know, on the other side of the coin, you know, I'm not getting any younger, so
yeah,
it's I just didn't want to be that guy up there on crutches, you know, having to sit down and I wanted to have some, you know, people remember it with some sense of vitality, you know, and so I think we're kind of ending on a positive note, I would say. And we gave ourselves quite a long window.
Yeah.
You know, we decided this last year and give us, you know, it's like a 8-month, 9-month window. So it's a long, slow kind of fade out into the sunset. We'll be done March 23rd, I believe, or 25th, something like that. So we got a lot of work ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got coming out as well, so we're working on that. Actually, two records. We've got a live album and a live DVD and a studio record.
The DVD, that's interesting you bring that up, because it almost seems like we see less of those in some respects since the advent of streaming. Is it something that's obviously there's a decent amount of cost in that, but, you know, you used to think of the live album as kind of the cheap thing to make, you know, back in the, you know, 80s. You could just set up a truck and record it. But the DVD, you know, that was a very big thing for a while. Is it still, I mean, is this something you see a big demand for? I mean, I don't, you correct me if I'm wrong, there hasn't been a Lynch Mob DVD to this point, correct?
I think there has been some. Yeah, okay. There have been some. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly what the product was called, but mm-hmm. It was one that we, I think we did one in the mid 2000s, like 2005 okay. or something. And then there was another one from, you know, the kind of the original version of Lynch Mob. I'm probably used the wrong term. I mean, I think of it as far as the DVD, but I think it'll end up being a kind of a streaming,
yeah.
like you mentioned.
No, you're...
But it's a live, the visual live performance is what I meant. So they'll probably use it for as a promotional device rather than, or maybe it'll come with the live album, you know, bundled.
Yeah.
So I'm not absolutely...
Yeah, it was Revolution Live too. Yeah, I actually had to go back and look that up as you were talking, because I'm like, you know, once you said that, I was like, I know I have something. Came out amongst the in the 2000s.
You know, the Re-Evolution Live record with Robert Mason and that was a nightmare to put that together. I won't get into the gory details, but that was something I wish I would have never involved myself with or involved with. It was absolutely insane. But once we started, we had to finish it, and there was all kinds of reasons for that, technical and, you know, all kinds of stuff. But anyways, this this video capture that we have is, as you mentioned earlier, it was inexpensive. It can potentially be inexpensive to do live records, and in this case, the video is, we really just captured a moment. I mean, we spent some money on it. We had, you know, camera crew and so forth, and had to get edited to a certain extent. But we didn't do any fixes or anything. I mean, we just captured what we played that night and in that room, and that's all it is. And I think that's the purity of that, I think, is pretty honest, and I like that about it. It's not perfect as far as, you know, there are some, I guess, quote unquote mistakes that we left alone. Nothing, you know, horrible, just human kind of things, you know, that you would see on a classic old video, let's say, from some classic rock band from the 70s, where, you know, it's not technically perfect, but it's beautiful because it's cool and
it's real. Yeah, that's the you know, as kind of a consumer of live videos and live streams, there's nothing more annoying than when you see a band with beautiful four-part harmonies and you realize only the singer is on mic, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think sometimes the honesty is really what people want. Obviously, when you're in a venue and you hear it live, you have a bit of a nostalgia to it, and you go back and listen to it on a CD, you might remember it certainly differently, and you don't get the repetition you would with a CD. But I think having something that's genuine to what you played is very special. You know, love some of those bands that did like the instant recordings, you know, that came right off the soundboard and they'd sell it right, you know, very quickly. You almost, as a fan, so I think sometimes prefer that. Give me the mistakes, give me the warts, you know, and selfishly, yeah, as a musician, I like to hear mistakes. I like to think that not, you know, there aren't people that are just absolutely perfect out there.
Now there could be, you know, you could go too far with that too. And I mean, you don't want it to suck.
Yeah. I don't want to comment on some of Kiss's soundboard recordings, but
it sounds like that could be a marketing feature, you know, like a promotional device. This DVD, this stream really sucks. You'll love it.
Yeah, there's some truth to that.
It's got so many mistakes, you're just going to love it.
As far as what's next for you, I mean, you have really exploded in the last decade with the amount of albums. I think, you know, a lot of artists, you know, especially that maybe made their bones in the 80s, are to the point now where they're releasing an album every 4 or 5 years, and I look back at you and you released like 5 or 6 last year alone. Do you still see yourself doing a decent amount of recording? And you've done a ton of collaborations with, you know, some of your friends at Frontiers. Do you still see that kind of in your future?
Well, I love being in the studio. So I have a pretty nice studio situation, both in California, where I have my own studio, and in South Mexico, where I have found a home out there in a really wonderful venue that where I'm working now, actually. So as long as I have a something to say, you know, I'll try to say it musically. But I will say that I've, as you mentioned, sort of spent my you know, I've done a lot of recording. I've written a lot of songs in the last, you know, a grip of years since, you know, since COVID and so forth. So I find myself kind of treading over old ground and saying the same thing, and I don't like that. Mm-hmm. And I think indication I've got to slow down in my output a little bit. So, as I mentioned, I am working on a Lynch Mob Final Ride studio record. It's been written and recorded, except on the vocals now.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, I've got other records in the pipeline that I am obligated. Well, I can do, let's say. I don't know how obligated I am. I don't want to do them. I don't have to do them. But one is a 4th End Machine record for Frontiers. And the other one is the 3rd Heavy Hitters album, which is an album that a series of records that Jeff Pilson and I have been doing,
mm-hmm.
for Cleopatra Records, which are covers, and that's always really fun to do. I enjoy doing working with Jeff, and I'll be working with Jeff Pilson on both those records. So that might be something that I decide to finish up. I don't know. But having said that, those are obligations consistent with my past work.
Right.
Just, you know, doing and Machine Records and Heavy Hitters Records and Lynch Mob Records and various other projects like KXM and so forth that I, you know, have been doing. But what I'm thinking is I would really like to, not to be super self-indulgent, but do something different.
Yeah.
And that requires kind of banking a bunch of experiences and exposure to different kinds of music and styles and saying something unique, or doing a master guitar record, what I consider would be my magnum opus guitar record. That's easier said than done.
Sure.
But maybe I need, I don't know. I'm not sure what I want to do yet, but I'm going to let this touring schedule ride out till the end of March, and then I'm going to sort of collect my thoughts and, you know,
regroup.
And
when you
see
look
what,
when you look at it, you know, you mentioned the master guitar record, and you're kind of walking into some very interesting company in that regard. You think of, you know, many contemporary guys who kind of made their seminal guitar, you know, instrumental record, or whether you had vocals or not. Is that, and obviously you're legendary for Mr. Scary, but do you like writing instrumental type music, or is that the riff has really got to speak to you, and you know, you've got to hear a melody, or how do you approach writing instrumentals versus, you know, if you're going to sit down and write a collaboration with vocals and such?
I'm geared, designed much more to write vocal oriented songs. And, no, it's not a natural fit for me. I'm not a Steve Vai, Satriani guy. I'm not in that mold. So it's more challenging for me to do that. I instinctively write for a vocalist. I'm a frustrated vocalist myself. I mean, I can't, in my brain, in my musical mind, I'm Aretha Franklin, but when I open my mouth, you know, the guy at the end of that movie who can't sing and rides away on the horse. I have no vocal skills whatsoever. I have no business trying to sing, but I hear it in my head, so I write that, I compose to that, and every, just about every singer I've worked with recognizes that, and they've mentioned that to me. They say, you know, you're already writing the vocal part. It's just sort of obvious, you know. It's, and so I like that, but that doesn't work conceptually as well for writing instrumental guitar music. So
sure.
Whatever that means. So, you know, you can always do the thing where the guitar is the voice, and I try to do that too. But I don't know. It's just kind of a mysterious thing for me. I don't really have a formula for it. So that's what makes it kind of hit and miss, and interesting, and challenging, and fun. And if I can go in and just play with the studio versus use it as a workshop, or like a factory, a music factory, which is what I normally do. I go into the studio and I've got everything locked up, and it's just chopping wood, you know?
Yeah.
I'm getting through the work. If I can use the studio more as a sort of a play area, and just really, you know, explore whatever sounds and ideas, whatever comes to mind, that would be the way I would like to do a record like that. Financially and logistically, that presents challenges, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I just need to throw caution to the wind and become a pure creative person. I think so much about that.
As far as social issues, I remember speaking to you, it seems like yesterday, but it was not yesterday, when you were doing the Shadow Nation film. Do you see yourself getting, have you been involved with things like that, or maybe a little lesser known, or do you see yourself getting more involved with a kind of social causes in, quote, retirement, I guess, if you want to use that word?
Yeah. Well, I won't lie. I have had a onset of sort of political fatigue.
Yeah.
And I'm sure many people that is what's happening in the world these days. But, and I feel somewhat ashamed, but I have to look out for my own ability to be energize myself and move forward and, you know, do my work, and is where it is, I'm very aware of everything going on. As far as being vocal and active through my music, let's say, or my little bit of the fact that I'm a little bit of a known entity in certain spaces of the music world, I have a little bit of a you know, a podium to speak from, potentially there. I have been very shy about, you know, really putting myself out there since Shadow Train and Shadow Nation because of not the blowback as much as just the wear and tear on my energy and ability to gather myself up and go fight the fight.
Yeah.
And I think it's just it takes a toll, you know. The status of low status that I have, I imagine people that are really in the up on the firing line, you know, people that really take it to the man, you know, so to speak. I mean, it takes an incredible amount of fortitude, and I don't know. But I will say something beautiful happened recently, which I'm sure you're aware of, is the commutation of Leonard Peltier's sentence, which is just a massive thing that news came on Inauguration Day, and I needed to hear that. I think a lot of people needed to hear that. It was very heartening and created a little spark in my sense of hopefulness, you know.
Yeah, which I think...
So welcoming to have that news.
That is awesome. George, I want to thank you again so much. It has been a pleasure. You will be here the end of February playing Jurgles. Should be a packed house, as always, when you get into town. And I think everybody collectively will look very much forward to whatever you get into next, because, I mean, you have gone into so many different avenues musically in the last decade or so that I think everyone is, you know, just looking forward to whatever you decide to do, and we wish you all the best. And we will see you in about a month when you get here, man.
Yeah, I believe that's the 26th, February 26th.
Yeah.
And it's Warrendale. And, we'll have a little bit of a fun thing I might try for that show. My oldest son is also a guitar player, and he may join me up on stage that night.
That would be awesome. I think everyone.
For that one. Looking forward to it. And thank you so much. It's always wonderful talking to you.
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much. Have a great day, George.
All right. The final ride for Lynch Mob 26th at Jurgles. So get your tickets now. They're available at jurgles.com, or you can go to our website, ironcityrocks.com, and go to episode 548 show notes. We'll link you right to where you need to go to get tickets while you still can. Also next week, if you're a guitar freak, if George Lynch isn't enough, you can join our next guest on the 28th at Moondogs, Tommy Castro. Tommy was on the show about 2 years back. He was coming through doing a show, and we're excited to see that he has a new album just released on the 7th of this month from Alligator Records. The album is called Closer to the Bone. He's coming in to do the show, a smaller, intimate gig. We talk about that and his history with Moondogs in the interview. So we're going to play you the lead-off single, which is Woke Up and Smelled the Coffee. And we get into the interview with Tommy Castro.
Spent about a week just thinking about this woman tried to ruin my life. For 3 long years she spent my hard-earned dough. Said she wanted to become my wife. Well, I moved just before I blew it. I packed my bags when I got hit to it. I woke up, smelled the coffee, baby. I got on out. I worked 12-hour days at 5 days a week, to keep that woman off of my back. Well, she hollered and she moaned about the money coming in, till I thought that I was gonna crack. Well, I moved to the outskirts of town, 'cause I refused to be her clown. I woke up, smelled the coffee, baby, I got on out. We'll be right back.
see so clear, but like some Windex was on my brain. It cut through the lies and the games that she played, and how I let them drive me insane. Well, I woke up in the nick of time, and I escaped that little crime. I woke up, smelled the coffee, baby, I got on out.
Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome back to Iron City Rocks. We have on the line Mr. Tommy Castro. How you doing, Tommy?
You know, I'm doing great. We're headed your way.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and you'll be.
We got a little home away from home in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We have lots of friends in the area. And, you know, we always look forward to coming to town, see everybody.
Yeah, I think we love seeing you. And the last time we talked, you were just kind of doing some touring. Now you've got a brand new record, which I think probably has to add a little excitement for you. Can you talk a little bit of this this album, a collection of your own original songs, but some songs from, dare I say, some influences, some friends of yours, people I'm sure you crossed paths with. Leadoff single was a Chris Kane song. Can you talk a little bit about some of those songs that got chosen? You know, the millions of songs you could cover. Why those in particular?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, my first idea was in between my usual formula of contemporary blues music that we have, you know, created a sound over the years. We like to think it's a recognizable sound. Tommy Castro Band, Tommy Castro and the Painkillers. You know, we write our own songs. Our influences are our traditional blues, blues of all kinds, rock blues, soul, funk, and of course, we were all raised on rock and roll. So all of those elements are in my music, you know. And being a blues artist, that is, you know, that feels like the right moniker for me. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, I feel most at home with the blues, and that's what got me started with all of this, you know. So that being said, in between all of those kind of records, I wanted to just make a straight up blues album one day. And I had this idea in the back of my mind, and I knew the right time would come, and this was it. And so then it became a matter of you know, what am I going to record? I mean, does it make sense to create a whole album full of original songs, you know, paying tribute to this kind of, traditional blues music? Or there's just so many songs I could do. And then the next thought was, well, you know, I've got a little list of songs up from my friends that I've always thought about doing. You know, Hole in the Wall by Magic Slim. He was a buddy of mine when we first started, you know, recording for Blind Pig back in the day when I was my first record deal. We would run into Slim all the time, and we had a lot of, you know, we partied together sometimes, and we would be on the same shows. We loved this music and his band. And there was a song on there that I always really thought about doing, you know, Hole in the Wall. I just really wanted to do that. And I thought this would be the right time to do it because he's a, you know, bona fide Chicago blues man. And then I thought, you know, well, my buddy Chris Kane has got a lot of really great songs. And if I go back far enough, I think it would be a legit idea to do a song of his that I always liked. We, you know, woke up and smelled the coffee. I always thought it was a great tune. It was on his first album. It's a 30-year-old tune. So I thought, why not cover Chris Kane? If I can cover Buddy Guy or BB King, why not Chris Kane? And the same kind of thing went for my old friend Johnny Nitro, who's not with us anymore, but
he really was involved in the early days of my, development. I don't want to say career so much as development as an artist, because I went to San Francisco to try to make it as a professional musician, just playing the clubs and making enough money to live on, playing in the Bay Area. And that happened pretty quick for us. And one of the guys that really kind of, mentored me when I got to town was this guy, Johnny Nitro, in San Francisco in the blues scene. He's very, very well known and loved. And I play a guitar that I bought from him to this day. It's like my main instrument is a 66 Stratocaster. Anyway, a song of his, he's got quite a few good ones. He actually, that song Dirty Dishes,
yeah.
Too Many Dirty Dishes by Albert Collins, that one was written by Johnny Nitro. And so I picked a song of his I always like called One More Night. And then there's a fellow that he is a songwriter. Well, let me see. His history is he was in that band called Wet Willie. He played in Delbert McClinton's band for many years. Lots of other, a Texas musician named Mike Duke. And he lived in San Francisco and wrote songs for Huey Lewis and the News. A bunch of their hit records were Mike Duke songs. Now he is kind of a caretaker and helps out at a music venue, Roadhouse Music Venue, out in West Marin County, San Francisco Bay Area. He's always there, when we do our shows there. And every time we do a show, we go back in the green room. And before we leave, Mike sits me down and plays me a song or two of his. And so I always had intended to do one of his songs, and I felt that was a good time for that. So those kind of ways I chose some of these songs that were not the usual way. I could go on, but there's some more ways I went about choosing these songs. But, I'll let you get a word in.
Yeah, well, that's okay. When you do a song from somebody who's a friend, I think most of the time a lot of cover songs end up being, producer suggested to artist, lawyer goes and fetches the rights, negotiates whatever. But when you're doing a song with a friend, do you call them up and say, hey, Chris, I'm thinking of doing this song. Are you cool with this? Or is there a song of mine that you would like me to stay away from or any of that kind of like, do you have those conversations or you just
no.
go for it and say, hey, check out what I did?
No, I told Chris I was going to do it. And I knew he would be happy about it because it's for one thing, he'll receive a little.
Yeah. Get a little taste of that.
Royalties on that, and I know I knew that he would consider it a a tribute and honoring him by doing one of his songs, me being a contemporary of his, recording one of his songs. I knew that he would appreciate that. I just assumed he was gonna be okay with it. I didn't ask him. I just kind of told him, hey, yeah, man, I'm gonna cover what the smell of the coffee. He thought it was really really cool, and rumor has it, I mean to give him a call, I keep forgetting, since the record actually hit the streets. He heard it before me. I know he knew it was coming, but since it's been doing so well, I didn't realize it was going to be sort of a lead track.
Yeah,
I didn't pick that. Somebody at the record label, they decide what they're going to put out there first, as a sort of a pre-release thing.
Yeah.
And it's gotten, it's been well received. It's doing really well as a single. And I've been meaning to tell him, hey man, thanks for the really cool tune, because it's doing really great things for us.
Yeah. I guess that's a lot easier than making the phone call to say, Chris, sorry, it tanked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much, much
nobody better. Likes that song. Sorry. It's a good tune, man.
Yeah, that was kind of between your style and that song, it's kind of a can't miss it. It's a fantastic song title, I have to say. It's one of those ones where you just like, you look at the track list, you're like, I think I might actually jump ahead and listen to this one because I love the title.
My mother used to say that to me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I can remember it. That's why it always rang true to me. You know, wake up and smell the coffee. I just thought that was an interesting, little old saying. And I like old sayings. You know, I've got I got a song called "You Can't Keep a Good Man Down," mm-hmm. and you knew the job was dangerous when you took it. You know, and
yeah, no, that's an excellent thing. Now, when you put these songs together, obviously in the studio, you've got horns and harmonicas musicians. But when you take this out on the road, are you touring as a 3-piece
or a 4-piece? We have a keyboard
player. So do you rely kind of on the keys to fill in some of the texture of the horns that you can't take with you?
Right. There's really, the only song that we're really doing that has horns on it right now is that Can't Catch a Break. And that has a full horn section on it. The other two songs that have horns on there are Johnny Guitar Watson's She Moves Me. And that's my my partner, Deanna Bogart, on saxophone. And I think when we were adding horns, we had the sax player Jack, a local, San Jose musician. I forget his last name right now. Anyway, he came in and added a part to that. So it's just a couple of saxophones on that track. And Bloodshot Eyes, I think the same kind of thing happened. Deanna played saxophone on it, and I think we added another part later on. Mm-hmm. So there's only those three tracks that really have horns on them. And at the moment, the only one of those that we're playing live is Can't Catch a Break, because it's kind of the music video song.
Right.
It's one of the originals.
When you take a new album out, I mean, you're to the point in your career that you've been blessed enough that you don't have time to do one song from every album. And without going into the wee hours of the morning, so
that's
how
true.
How do you work in? You've got 14 new, fresh, shiny tracks that I'm sure, in a lot of ways, and maybe I'm crazy, but it's got to be kind of fun to play some new stuff. So how do you weigh in? How much of this album are you able to kind of squeeze in without losing the essential Tommy Castro songs?
That's a very good point, and I learned years ago not to play the whole new album when I get to a gig. And people let me know they don't like that. They like the new songs, but hey, we still want to hear our favorite songs. And so I mix it up. I think it's probably about half and half.
Okay.
I think we might be doing like 5 or 6 songs from the new album now, but we don't play them all every night either. I change my set list every night just to keep us fresh.
Yeah.
We have so many old songs that are good. I'm not to toot my own horn or anything, but if I look, there's also a lot of songs that are just okay.
Yeah.
But if I look back on my catalog, I mean, there's a lot of songs I wish that I think are really good, and my band likes to play, and my fans like to hear, and I really can't get all of those in a night's show, so I just rotate them out, in and out, and that's a lot of fun. But having new stuff to play, especially when this stuff just feels so natural to me, because that's all I ever really wanted to do is play the blues.
Yeah,
but I knew when I came out as an artist, really trying to make my own mark in this business, that I couldn't just be satisfied with playing songs in the style of all my blues heroes. I'd be perfectly happy doing that, but I knew I needed to bring something of my own, and so my love for, I would say, Memphis soul music from, '60s Stax Volt era, other classic soul also, but we really lean heavy on the Memphis sound when we do it, and when we create our own songs that have that sort of influence, that's kind of where it's coming from. My Wilson Pickett influence, and Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, Rufus Thomas, you know, Bad Bag, Al Green. I mean, we could go on, but that, so there's some of that in what we do. And I like real rock and roll, like Little Richard and Chuck Berry. And so there's always a little, all of those elements kind of come into our music.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I'm having fun doing just this straight blues on this album is really, it's really been a kind of refreshing thing for me.
Yeah. And it certainly sounds, I think one of the cool things is, you know, even though there's, I'm not even going to try to count how many songwriters that went into this album, you know, including yourself on several songs. But the fact that at the end, it doesn't sound like a, you know, to date myself, a K-Tel record where it's a bunch of different artists stuck together. This sounds like, even, you know, if you've got more than one vocalist, this still sounds like a unified band doing this in it, which is kind of cool. You know, it's other people's songs, but it still feels like your record to the listener, which is, it's a really nice thing to listen to. Sometimes you get these, you know, when people introduce covers, you can kind of, stuff jumps out at you. This is a, you know, this song's a giant left turn from what you normally expect. This one's, you know, right in line, but this one feels like an album. And I think people who listen to it will know what I mean when I say that, that it's a really cohesive sounding record, which is, I'm sure, not easy. You know, maybe it is for you, but I can't imagine it would be easy.
Well, this is a good time to bring up my ace in the hole, Keith Anderson. Mm-hmm. That man is a genius, and this was, there was nobody. I can't think of anybody better qualified to make this kind of a record, because he knows this music inside and out. He can play all the instruments himself.
Yeah.
And he's great ideas. You know, he can recall stuff from you know, thousands of records and artists and players we all listen to this music from years and years back, you know, yeah, probably mostly from the 50s forward, but, you know, Kid Anderson knows this stuff inside and out. So when we're looking for ideas in the studio, you know, what does this need? Where do we, you know, what does this song need? What does this track need? What's right about it? What's wrong with it? You know, so we kind of, we go at it with a basic idea, just play it. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, we try to keep that live feel on everything that we did in there. And Kid was really, you know, he was really helpful. And because I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, mm-hmm, and I have a tendency to want to always think something needs to be better. You know, I'll hear it, I'll go, I think I could do better than that. And he'll go, listen, that's what you played at the moment. It's perfect. You know, don't fuck with it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, you're fine. No, I'm sure it's very easy to make it so perfect it becomes sterile. You know,
yeah, you can. And so he was really good at keeping me a little more honest, you know, than I might have done on my own. So, mm-hmm, and that's why I brought him in, because I wanted a real blues record that was going to sound authentic and also be really, undeniably a Tommy Kester record. And so I could go on about Kid on how much he had to do with the, you know, production of this, and the, you know, even chimed in on some writing a couple of the tunes, yeah, you know, when we needed a line or something like that. You know, he helped out when we were writing Crazy Woman Blues. He wrote that line. I still laugh about it, because I had to really think about it before I actually recorded it. I go, man, I think I can get away with this, but here it is. That's the last line, or is it? It's in the second verse, and it's about a guy that's attracted to women that are absolutely no good for him. You know, attracted to women that are just a little bit nuts, and And there's some truth to that.
Dare I ask if the Lisa Anderson on the record happens to be related to Kid? And did he end up in the doghouse as a result of any of that?
No, that was his idea. That was a joke, actually.
Yeah.
They did that for me as a joke. So when I heard it, I would laugh, you know. And then it just stayed on there. And everybody got used to it. And even Bruce Iglauer, who we were sure was going to ask us to take it off.
Yeah.
You know, he thought it, he got used to it and thought it should stay. But, sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Oh, that's okay. Tommy, will you be bringing copies if folks want to purchase this at the show itself? Vinyl,
oh, yeah.
CDs, excellent.
Yeah, well, what I have for you is a 180-gram blue translucent vinyl copy of this record, as well as CDs, of course.
Awesome.
But yeah, I think the vinyl is beautiful, man, and it sounds great. I tested it out on my own home hi-fi, or stereo, I should say. I got an old stereo from it's kind of a vintage unit. Mm-hmm. And so it really has that sound, man. You put the vinyl on, and it reminds me of listening to records when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
It has that, it gets that sizzle, that little sizzle comes out, man, and it, something happens.
Yeah.
Something happens. It tweaks my brain somewhere, tickles my brain somewhere in there.
Can almost hear Wilson Pickett as you said that. So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. There's certain records, not just the record, but the record on the piece of equipment sometimes can be, spark such nostalgia. It's priceless. Well, Tommy, I want to thank you. You've obviously got many shows to do between here and the 28th, but we will see you in just, 10 days from now. So thank you.
Well, let's
so
have
much
a little shout. Let me do a little shout out to Moondog over there. You know, we've been coming to Pittsburgh for years, and, Ron has become a good friend of ours. And, he's had to deal with a lot of challenges in the last few years. And, we really love the guy. And there are other places to play now in town. And we did do a gig somewhere else in town our last time through. And I promised them that the next time through that we would come back and play Moondogs. And so I think that what our deal is probably going to be in the long run is at least every other time through, we'll be playing there. We'll play the club because he's the one that put us on the map in that town, and put us on his blues festival several times. And, we look forward to coming back to Moondogs. You can't beat a place with that kind of, you don't get that vibe. Just, there are other kinds of venues that
sure.
can be a little bit nicer, you might say, or a little bit more, a little slicker, state of the art, spaces, but that funky dive blues joint feel, it's got to be authentic. You can't just make that up. That's got to really be there. And that's what Moondogs is. And that's why people have been coming there for 50 years and still go. So, hats off to our buddy Moondog.
Awesome. Hey, thank you, Tommy. I want to thank you, and we will see you in just a couple of days, man.
All right, Iron City rocks.
All right, all the best, Tommy. We'll see you in a week or so.
Thank you.
All right, the album Closer to the Bone from Tommy Castro and the Painkillers is available now on Alligator Records. You can catch him on the 28th doing a show at Moondogs. It'll be an amazing night of music there. And as we mentioned earlier, George Lynch will be at Jurgles on the 26th. So two great shows here in what is usually kind of a quiet time here in Pittsburgh for shows. We've got two great club shows in 1 week. So if you're a guitar fan, these two guys are really can't miss top-notch players. So I invite you to check that out. I invite you to check out our website, ironcityrocks.com. All of our social medias are Iron City Rocks. If you enjoy, this kind of musicianship, these genres of music of metal and blues, and rock, we try to kind of spread it around a little bit so we're not
strictly a metal show or strictly a blues show. Last episode, we had a comedian join us. So we try to keep it fun and entertaining, and invite you to check that out. You can drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Do you like the comedians? Do you like the blues? Do you want more metal? Let us know what you're interested in. Also, a reminder to check out our Facebook page in particular. It's facebook.com/ironcityrocks. We are releasing the winners of the Iron City Rocks Pittsburgh Music Awards. Those have been going on this week in particular. We kind of put a new one out every couple hours so that the winners have time to kind of bask in the glory of and the accolades from other musicians. And I'm very pleased to see, as we announce the winners, how gracious other musicians are in particular. It's great to see. We don't get a lot of snide comments or anything like that. And as you look at these, keep in mind this is 100% fan voted. These are not artists selected by Iron City Rocks either for nomination or final voting. This is 100% by you, the listeners of the show, people who follow us on social media. It's their input. So if you're interested in it, you're out there in a band and you're thinking, hey, how do we get involved in something like this? Stick with us on social media. We do this every year. Great opportunity to get your band some recognition. So check that out as well. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to listen, and we will talk to you next time.